This episode is brought to you by Casella's Prosciutto Speciale. Learn more at casellasalumi.com.
This week on Meat & Three, we continue our trade series with a piquant look at the many faces of the spice trade, from the high price tag of saffron to the ubiquity of chilies and the potential ripple effect that farmer protests in India may have on the global spice market.
You know, farmers are protesting because they feel like their lives and livelihoods are on the line.
You find it in a lot of cured foods, like cured meat and Parmesan cheese. You also find it in ripening foods, like ripe tomatoes are very high in MSG. So there's sources of it all over the natural world.
Tune in to Meat & Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for joining us for this hour of Eat Your Heartland Out. I'm your host, Capri Cafaro. On today's show, our guests introduce us to the multifaceted world of cider making. We will first visit with John Behrens, president of the Michigan Cider Association, who will provide us with a primer on the Midwestern cider scene. Then Deidre Birmingham, the woman behind the cider farm in Wisconsin. She will tell us all about her orchard-to-glass approach to cider making. And finally, we will meet Walter Fanning, a young cider maker also from Wisconsin, whose experimentation with infused flavors has made the cider at Hidden Cave Cidery a standout in the region. Now we welcome our first guest, John Behrens, president of the Michigan Cider Association. John, we're excited to have you on Eat Your Heartland Out. Thanks for joining us.
Excited to be here.
So you're the president of the Michigan Cider Association, and I believe you also represent the Midwest in the National Association for Cider Makers. So you'd be very, qualified to tell our audience what trends you're seeing in the cider industry, both within the Midwest region as well as nationally.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of exciting things. It's been an exciting time for cider for a while now, and we're seeing kind of the continuation of that and almost the increasing speed at which some of those trends are coming to fruition. But a lot of different diversification and diversity within cider. I'd say it's probably one of the biggest things we're seeing. Oftentimes people say cider is kind of where craft beer was like 15 years ago, mm-hmm. You know, where your average bar, your average grocery store had maybe a craft beer option available. And it really wasn't until you started to see those different flavor profiles and different ingredients being used in cider, in beer at that time, where it was kind of like, maybe I'm not a stout person, but I'm into IPAs. That's
right.
The same sort of thing we're starting to see across the categories within cider.
That's interesting. You are from Michigan, and so you have a good sense of, what makes Midwest cider, different and special from other regions. What makes the Midwestern cider different maybe than, for example, I've been in Vermont and visited the Woodchuck, cider factory, for lack of a better term, and enjoyed some of their different ciders. So what would make a Midwestern cider unique and different than, say, the ones that I experienced up in Vermont?
Yeah, there's certainly a regionality component to cider. All cider is great cider, and it's like to make the comparison to wine. From a licensing standpoint, in many states, cider is considered a wine, being an alcohol derived from fruit.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a terroir that is only really recently beginning to kind of be understood, especially by the consumer, as it relates to apples. As when we make the comparison to wine, different grapes obviously lead to different types of wines. The same grapes grown in different regions even lead to different types of wines many times. And we're seeing the same thing is true in apples.
Mm-hmm.
The Midwest is a very large grower of apples. You think of apples and you kind of have really three main regions. You've got the Pacific Northwest, you've got the Midwest, and then you've got the Northeast. some of the things that make the Midwest ciders really so special and so unique and so delicious is the apples that we grow here. There's a lot more of a tannin component that people mm-hmm. often pick up on apples that are coming from the Midwest. There's a little bit of a more complexity. It's not to say that, you know, ciders made anywhere else aren't as good. They're different in their own ways.
Sure.
But there's a lot of that. We're fortunate that we're starting with great apples, and that's kind of step one when it comes to making cider.
Well, you know, I've talked to so many different folks in the process of putting together this episode focused on cider production in the Midwest, and we've all had conversations about apples, apple orchards, you know, sourcing appropriate apple variations, choosing apples, and as kind of in the same way as you're looking at grapes if you're making wine. No one has talked about pears, and I think of this right now simply because I, you know, going through my Rolodex of memories of when I was in Vermont and tasting cider, and I remember having pear cider there. You know, is pear cider something that is available or made in these different regions? Is it something that you can get in the Midwest, or is it really something that is maybe, for example, I know that pears are a big thing in Oregon. Is it something that maybe not available in the Midwest because people aren't growing as many pears?
Yeah, so there are pear ciders. There's kind of two different things here. There's, if you're making something, you know, more exclusively from pears, it's often referred to as Perry. But if there's also pear cider, which is, you know, an apple and pear combination, uh-huh. it's something definitely within the Midwest that you can find. I'd say it's something you have to seek out more so than you're not likely to just stumble on it at your local kind of major grocery store.
Right.
And I think a lot of that's just, it's sort of pears versus apples in terms of, you know, any other sense, apples are more prevalent. And so as a result, ciders are more prevalent than Perry. But it's something that is popular in small circles. It's got its own unique flavor profile.
Yeah.
Obviously lots of history around pears as well and different types of pears. So a lot of interesting flavors. But yeah, it's certainly less prevalent, at least within the Midwest, versus straight up apple ciders.
Any place that focuses on pears more? I mean, is there, I don't know, I mean, since you're on the National Association and, you know, sort of in the Midwest region representing, you know, the region for the National Association, do you see any specific states that may use pears more often than others, even though apples are more prevalent, as you say, in the Midwest?
Yeah. Within the Midwest, there isn't a specific state that I would go to. I've had some great pear ciders and some great Perrys from a few places within the Midwest. But again, it's something you kind of have to seek out. I'm aware of some places like in the Pacific Northwest that are some very very small, very craft producers that focus more so on pear-based products than they do on apples. But I'm not aware of any places in the Midwest that are doing more pear than they are apple.
Interesting. I'm sorry to have gone down a pear rabbit hole, but it did. This conversation did provoke that memory, and it occurred to me we hadn't really talked about it with anyone else. So I'm glad that you at least had a little bit of insight that you could share with us.
Yeah, and they're very related, even from a licensing, from a taxation uh-huh. standpoint. You know, cider and pear are very similar.
I definitely got to keep my eye on this because I've never heard pear cider or pear. How do you pronounce it again? Perry?
Perry.
I've never heard that term before, so I've learned something new today. Every time I talk to somebody on this show, every guest I have, you're all so incredible, and I learn something every time I talk to somebody new, and so I know that my audience is as well. So, Perry.
Excellent.
Ladies and gentlemen in the listening audience, if you're looking for a pear cider, it may not be actually pear cider, which is apparently pear and apple. Perry is its own thing involving pears. So now you know, and knowing is half the battle. So I want to talk more specifically about Michigan, since that's where you're from, and your personal experience as well, getting involved in making cider. Everybody has their own kind of journey into making cider or making wine, and I know that you have a unique story as well.
Yeah, it's for me, it started out as a hobby several years ago. You know, something, do it starting with friends. You know, originally we're making beer and cider. You know, with beer, I love beer as much as the next person, but it was like, well, this is felt kind of silly after a while, because I can, you know, walk a block either direction and buy nearly any style of beer imaginable. And you contrast that with cider, where we really weren't even starting to see the diversification of cider at that point. Mm-hmm. And so it was more fun to kind of explore things that you couldn't just go to the store and buy.
And how long ago was this?
This was at least a decade ago at this mm-hmm. point. And so we found that we were shifting as a group of friends, shifting our attention more towards cider and less towards beer. And it started to kind of spread from there, where you've got, you know, a friend tries it, really likes it, but, you know, can you make me some of that? And then it's friends of friends, and someone's getting married, can you make us a keg? And before long, awesome. It was like, this is something we needed to kind of make a real thing. And even at that point, it was still intended to be a hobby after going and getting our licensing and had purchased this farm that's been in my family for over 150 years now, ever since great-great-grandparents came over from Germany 150 years ago. And was kind of had the idea at that point, saw these two paths coming together. Property was originally an orchard, had been abandoned for over a decade. How could we, you know, take something that we love making, people seem to enjoy, how can we take that and use that as a means to kind of bring this farm back to life, bring this property back to life, and share it with as many people as possible? And that was about 6 years ago now, from kind of the initial kind of real commercialization and having a real product to sell to complete strangers.
So you said that the farm basically was an orchard at one point and was abandoned. So did you have to start from scratch and regrow trees? And, you know, did you get into grafting, you know, certain varieties, or were you able to salvage what was there?
Kind of a combination of both. And we are working with other local orchards as well, because mm-hmm. We're fortunate being where we are in Michigan. They're within, you know, 10 miles of us. It's 70% of the apples in the state are grown, and Michigan's
that's convenient.
The largest grower. Yeah.
You can make cider.
Exactly. But there are some descendant trees from the original trees that are there that we've certainly done some small batch kinds of ciders with. We've planted some new trees for some of our specialty things as well. So kind of a combination, and it's been an eye-opening and interesting experience for sure.
I bet. I can imagine. And, you know, again, every time I talk to somebody, I'm like, this would be so fun. It would be such a great adventure. And then I realize there's a lot of very detailed, you know, sweat equity, as my grandfather would say, one way, shape, or form, to get something like this up and running. It sounds like such a wonderful, you know, thing to do, to get your, you know, to have a plot of land, to be able to plant something, to be able to have this value-added product that you can share with the world. But then you remember there's like licensure and training and, you know, you have to deal with the weather. There's all these things. And so, you know, those of us who are consuming your products are very thankful that you are willing to put that sweat equity in, that's for sure.
Yes, well, appreciate that. There's definitely, it's got a glamorous side to it that I think people think of first, but there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears behind the scenes to kind of make everything a reality. But yeah, we went deep kind of with our research and things. I'd actually even taken a trip over to Germany to visit some orchards there.
Oh, wow.
Kind of try to understand, you know, these are the types of ciders that were being made at the time. Cider had been made on this property before, but just for personal consumption. But trying to kind of make some ciders based off of that history and family legacy as well. So it's definitely fun, but yeah, share some frustrations as well.
Sure. Well, I mean, it sounds like it's a passion that is, you know, somehow rooted in your DNA. So cool. Love to hear, you know, these unique stories. And, you know, let's turn actually from, you know, sort of making the cider to, you know, using the cider in a way to attract people into a region. I love to talk about the tourism element of you know, food and drink and in the culinary space. And I know that cider is no different. We often think about, you know, wine tours or winery tours or brewery tours, but cider is picking up in that way as well. Is that what you're seeing in Michigan?
Absolutely. Cider is really a leader in this sense. It's more of an agricultural product, at least in Michigan, than really any of the other craft beverages it's often compared against.
Sure, most that makes cideries, sense.
Yeah, throughout the Midwest, and I know in Michigan in particular, it is nearly exclusively Midwest-grown, Michigan-grown fruit that's being used to produce each of these products. And that's not always the case in some other great beverages as well, but that lends itself to the tourism piece that you mentioned. You know, we certainly see urban cideries, you know, that aren't located on orchards, and cider tastes just as good in those locations. But you get diversity there as well, in that you can also go to an orchard and see the apples growing and taste the prior year's crop, you know, while you're staring at the current year's crop. And that product has never left that plot of land, you know, from the time it grew on the tree till you're drinking it out of the glass. And it's really got a great story and a great feel for people that can kind of see the whole process.
That's awesome. And I find that, you know, very attractive. I think I always like to know how things work. And I know a lot of people do as well. So to be able to see that entire sort of lifespan, if you will, from the tree to the glass, I'm sure is very interesting to visitors. And I know that a lot of, I feel like a lot of states now and a lot of trade associations are putting together these maps where you can, you know, drive around and find, you know, whether it's a brewery or in this case a cidery or, you know, whatever. Is that, you know, a trend on the horizon for the cider industry nationwide? Are you seeing that, you know, kind of emerge?
Yeah, absolutely. At both a national level and at a regional and state level, we've got options available for people. And it's a great community of people amongst cider producers, cider companies. You know, for the most part, everyone gets along very, very well. So I know, speaking for ourselves, we keep a stack of maps handy for anyone that comes in and shows interest to kind of, you know, here's some other places around to make sure you check out. Try this cider at this place. Ask this person about that thing. Because it takes all of us to kind of grow the industry and get it to where we feel that it's headed.
No question about that. And I'm seeing that theme again across so many communities in the Midwest, that you really, you know, do band together as a family to lift all boats and to, you know, if one, you know, farm, you know, tour or winery or whatever is bringing in, you know, visitors, everybody wants to try to share in that and collectively, you know, be able to attract to a region and share their bounty, share their talents with neighbors near and far. Before I let you go, I do want to ask, what do you think is in the next frontier for cider that we haven't covered?
I really think it's an extension on this diversification. You know, we see healthy alcohol is kind of a trend overall, you know, with seltzers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Cider being derived exclusively from fruit, it sort of feels like the consumer is just starting to kind of make that connection of, if you want to talk about, you know, whole ingredients, you know what you're consuming, whether it's something that you're eating or in this case, something that you're drinking. Cider really checks a lot more boxes than I think people as a whole have started to really realize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, local ingredients, we talked about that, supporting agriculture, right, supporting your community. And then as you layer in the different types of cider that are becoming more widely available, you know, we've seen sour ciders if you're into wild fermented things. We see dry hop ciders if you're coming from a beer background. We see single varietal ciders if you're more of a wine drinker, cider cocktails if you're more into spirits. So there really is something for everyone. And I really think the average person is just starting to kind of put two and two together and kind of awaken to the true possibility of the diversity of cider.
What a great note to end on, John. Thank you so much. Something for everyone in cider. I love cider, and I know many others do too. So we'll keep our eye peeled on all these new emerging types of ciders, and we appreciate you sharing your knowledge.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
This is Eat Your Heartland Out. We will be right back after this break.
This episode is brought to you by Casella's Prosciutto Speciale. Casella's Prosciutto Speciale is made in America following the time-tested traditions of Italy's Norcini, the itinerant butchers who traveled the countryside preparing, seasoning, and aging meat. Just like those dedicated artisans of old, Casella's Prosciutto starts with the highest quality ingredients. They exclusively use rare breed heritage pigs, including Duroc, Tamworth, Berkshire, and Large Black, which are pasture-raised by small family farmers across the U.S. Their slow, on-the-bone curing process follows the standards of the Italian Prosciutto Consortia and produces consistently gorgeous results. Casella's Prosciutto is elegant. It is marbled, delicate, and nutty. They value that each ham is unique from the next, showcasing the subtle difference between breeds, farms, sizes, and pigs. Casella's believes in the quality of ingredients, good pork, salt, and thyme. It's that simple. Learn more at casellasalumi.com.
Welcome back to Eat Your Heartland Out. We are now joined by Deirdre Birmingham from the Cider Farm in Wisconsin.
Deirdre, thank you for joining the show today, which is all about cider, something that you know quite a bit about, but you didn't actually start your career off in agriculture or cider. How did you make your way from your original career to where you're at today?
Yes. Well, actually, I did start studying agriculture in college during my sophomore year. I had been working with horses since I was 9 years old and couldn't see life apart from a horse. So when I went off to the university, I was intent on studying or getting the background I would need to apply to the College of Veterinary Medicine to be an equine practitioner. And agriculture classes were a good background for that. And so I enrolled in the College of Ag my sophomore year, but got to liking the classes in agriculture that I was taking. I also learned I could live apart from a horse. My horse was sold. And I also got interested in global hunger and poverty issues. So I launched in that direction and was working overseas, primarily in Africa, and did two graduate degrees where my research was in West Africa. And when I was in grad school at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, I met John, who later became my husband. And in that process, he asked me if having these degrees in agriculture, but working in Africa, if I had ever thought about having a farm. And I said, no, I have never thought about having a farm myself. There's no farmland in the family. I found myself born in Chicago and raised in a northern suburb, so I had never really thought about it, but he had a file of farm ideas. So that kind of clinched the deal. We decided we wanted to do a farm-based business together. And then finally in 2002, when work took us, his work took us back to Wisconsin, I started in earnest looking for farmland. And we did find a naturally pretty landscape. It wasn't hadn't been lived on for almost 50 years. And we hadn't yet decided what we were going to do for our farm-based business. We just knew we would do things organically and that we would produce some high-quality product. So like a finished product or a value-added product. So we bought this land, thought about several enterprises. There were wild apple trees everywhere. And I had found myself reading on the ins and outs of ciders or hard ciders, as they've come to be known in the U.S. So we decided that's something we would like to do. We would grow apples organically for the purposes of making ciders. And so in that process, we learn that cider is made like a wine. And to do it commercially, you have to have a winery permit. So we thought, well, to make fine.
In Wisconsin?
No, in the U.S. So yes, in Wisconsin and in the U.S. Yep.
I always like to know that backstory of how things are actually, as I've mentioned this in other interviews, you know, we often talk about the ideas, but there's also those nuts and bolts behind it that are important.
Right. Yes. Yes. Especially if it comes to an alcoholic product, there are lots of nuts and bolts. So lots of things you didn't even know to ask when that you learn about as you get into an alcoholic product. So since we learned that right off the bat that cider making is basically a wine making process, we thought about, well, fine wines are made from wine grapes. What would be the wine grapes of apples? So we learned that the English and French in particular develop varieties for the purposes of fermentation, if not even distillation. So we thought, well, we have to get some of these varieties, some of which even have tannins, because like in a red wine grape, tannins can give mouthfeel, complexity, give some real structure mm-hmm. to the fermented product. So we thought, well, let's grow those varieties because there's plenty of sweet tart apples here in the U.S. and right here in Wisconsin and Minnesota. So we found out quickly that those kinds of apple varieties were not commercially available in the U.S. So we took a class on grafting, which is the horticultural process to make trees, fruit trees and other things. And we took the class from a man who actually had some of these tannic cider varieties in his own small orchard. So that gave us a start. It was a very slow start, you know, with our first grafting class being in 2003, and then learning how to grow apples. I don't come from a line of generations of apple growers. And so it was a learning on the job, you might say, sort of process of learning how to grow sure. these varieties. And I realized after a few years that I was like a data point of one in the U.S. growing these varieties rare to the U.S. Organically in our Midwest conditions.
And that is definitely a distinction to be proud of. And, you know, going literally from, grafting a seed to producing enough apples to and very specific apples to make a cider. You know, you said you started all the way back in 2002, 2003. When did you start putting out your first bottles and how did you start, you know, distributing your cider? Did you start with, you know, farmers markets or tasting rooms or, you know, directly into the retail space?
Yes. Well, the first product we actually came out with was not cider, but apple brandy. So, and we worked with a local distillery. It was the second distillery to open in the state of Wisconsin. And we contacted them in 2011. That's when we really got our sort of first, you might say, commercial level of apples. And we weren't really finding a local winemaker to work with in the region. We needed, you know, somebody who was a high-quality winemaker, had an interest in cider and the fermentation capacity to add cider, and that was challenging. So I had read about this new distillery that had opened and contacted them, and they were already making apple brandy for them and another orchard. So he was intrigued by these apple varieties we had. So we started working with them to distill our cider to brandy. And in the maturation process, because we elected to age it for 2 years, and during that 2 year time, as we got to know the distillers, they said we could sell this out of here and not make us go through a distributor. And so those first couple releases just sold out in first one in less than 2 months, and the next year it sold out in 6 weeks. So
Was it so popular? Was it so popular because brandy is so popular in Wisconsin? Did that make the brandy that much more attractive to the market because there is this, you know, longstanding love affair, at least, you know, theoretically between brandy and Wisconsin?
It certainly helps. It certainly helps. And I think there's also this interest in more locally produced products, fine products, you know, high quality products and organic ones, because ours are made from organic apples. And over the years, we've gotten our distiller to also go organic in his processes for fruit brandies. So now we'll be able to call our apple brandy organic, not just made with organic apples. And so, yes, it helps that brandy is so widely consumed in the state. I mean, Wisconsin, when Korbel, which is kind of the, a mass producer of just brandy, 36% of their national production in the U.S. goes to Wisconsin. So that gives you a sense of the love of brandy Wisconsin has. Now, I will say it's a lot of cheap brandy made from wine grapes. But anyway, yes, it's certainly on people's mind. And the brandy old fashioned is the most popular drink in Wisconsin.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And I had a lovely conversation with someone else earlier in the season about just that, trying to introduce our listeners to the uniqueness of the Wisconsin cocktail. But this show is all about cider. So I'm curious to know, how did you make the shift then from this apple brandy ultimately into, you know, utilizing these very special variety apples into an organic cider?
Yes. Well, we were fortunate that some people from Chicago bought a farm practically around the corner from us. And as we just got to know them in their first year here socially, we learned that he's a restaurateur, and he and his partners have genuine farm-to-table restaurants in Chicago. They had one at the time. We're looking at a second. And they are committed to buying craft products, including for their bar, from local producers. So he was very intrigued by the apples we have. And he said, I know of a winery in Illinois that does a good job. And what about if we have them make the cider there and then we sell it in our restaurants? And for us, it became like a beta test. Oh, great. We could see, well, how well does this winery even do making ciders? And then how well does it sell? So all went quite well. That was, I believe, 2015 or 16. And then we, the next year, took more juice to this winemaker and then launched our own label. And we first just came out with kegged cider that could be served on tap. And that's a challenging way to get into the marketplace because you don't have a bottled product that people can see and sample. And so then we worked, we bought a bottling line, and because bottling lines for a still wine that's not carbonated are different than what you need for a carbonated product. So that allowed us to also get into bottles. And then more recently, in 2018, we decided to open our own cidery and retail operation, or tasting room, we call it, in Madison, Wisconsin, just 45 minutes from our farm. So that's allowed us to do more, what you might say, direct-to-consumer sales. And also we feature a lot of other local and organic farms in all our food offerings there.
And that's important, too. I do want to talk about how you identify your sourcing as well, outside of the things that you specifically grow. But, you know, do you look to Wisconsin-specific ingredients, or do you branch out into the region greater in order to source some of the things that you serve, for example, or integrate into your products?
Yeah, well cider, I mean, the apples are mostly ours. We do, since I focus on growing tannic apples, and over time, well, actually, when I started, I learned of a couple growers and who were hosting an organic apple field day, and then said to them, oh, is there an association, or are there going to be more field days, or, you know, how do I learn about growing apples organically? And they're like, well, we've been talking right. about that. And I had a background in a startup nonprofit that I helped get going. And when we were living elsewhere, and I said, I could help with that. So we started this association of organic fruit growers. And through that process, I got to know a couple growers so that we could source some of the sweet table apples. And they also had the capacity to juice them. They make their own hard cider, so they I can work with them to get the qualities I want in the apples that they produce that could go into our blends. So we use some of their apples in a couple of the ciders we produce. And then we also were doing some raising of hogs. We would just feed out some hogs off the apples we don't use, and everything that comes up off our apple press. But as the orchard grew, I was being advised to let's get somebody whose business is raising livestock to actually finish off these hogs for you. So now we work with that farm, and they're certified organic, all pasture-based, permaculture, and they are raising whole and half hogs for us. And also their beef and chicken we sell in our tasting room as well. So, and then we work with another local farm who does excellent sausage making. And then there's a lot of organic vegetable growers in the region. So, a mm-hmm. neighbor to us, we're able to use a lot of her product. So it's very important to us. It just is part of who we are to source locally and organically, or people who are using very regenerative processes on the landscape. So cider is very food friendly. It pairs with so many different kinds of foods. And if I had to just limit it to one food category in the world, I would say cheese. Cheese would be my first, if I only had one go-to, and we are in cheese Mecca. We have the highest concentration of master cheesemakers, you know, right here in southwest and south central Wisconsin. So featuring cheese and charcuterie boards in our tasting room is just key. And we've done cider and cheese pairing classes. So we really do like to help people learn also how to enjoy cider and also the many wonderful things that it pairs well with.
There seems to be a theme here, because we've heard about cider and cheese before and how prevalent that is, I think, and at least it's a growing trend that seems to be picking up and maybe one day actually even eclipsing the whole wine and cheese thing that everybody is so used to. I want to go back to your tasting room and so some of the things that you do that, certainly pre-COVID that might be considered ways to attract tourism. I'm always interested in learning more about, you know, agritourism and culinary tourism. And it sounds like your tasting room and the region that you're in Wisconsin, as well as the type of food that you serve, sounds like it's something that is going to attract people from across the region. Is that something that you're focused on, bringing people out and having them learn about not only how the apples are grown, but how the cider is made and ultimately how to consume it best with things like cheese?
Yes. So we do farm tours. So starting up with apple blossom time in late April, we'll be starting up our farm tours. We were doing them monthly last year and bi-monthly, you know, twice a month when we got into fall, where people could see the apple pressing. So we look forward to doing that again. We keep our group sizes limited. And then also in our tasting room, we really like to feature Wisconsin. And we've had people, like we had a Japanese woman who came in. She worked with Toyota, and she literally changed her hotel from downtown Madison out to the west side where we are. So, because she had seen us on the web, and she wanted to be in a hotel. There's three hotels right next to our tasting room. And she walked over, and before she left, she said, "Now I have tasted Wisconsin." And
I love it.
Yeah. So having people experience Wisconsin and finding partners to do that, we're part of what's called Destination Madison, so that we're in their program that helps people locate us. And we participate in the local like passport programs and things that help, bingo cards where you go to all the local wineries, breweries, distilleries. So we do a lot of collaborative activities with business associations or other people kind of in the industry. We have a really collaborative atmosphere in Madison that we're happy to help encourage and participate in.
I have spent some time in Wisconsin, and through this program, I've had a chance to speak to a lot of people from Wisconsin in the culinary space, and that sense and spirit of collaboration is consistent from everyone that I've met and everyone that I've spoken to.
Great. I'm glad to hear that on your end. And then the other thing we do is that once people experience our ciders there, they want to know, well, how do I get them? And so we've started working with a shipping program that allows us to have the cider shipped to 33 states outside of Wisconsin. And then within Wisconsin, we work with a statewide distributor so that that distributor can get us into a lot of retail locations and restaurants, and also with another distributor in the Chicago area. So that's how, and then we listed on our website, you know, where to buy and how to have our ciders shipped as well.
Great. Well, you have started to answer my final question. If somebody wanted to taste Wisconsin and get their hands on your cider and your brandy and anything else that you're selling, where could our listeners find that, outside of traveling to Madison, which maybe people are not doing right now due to COVID, but how can they find you on the web and get your goods shipped to them?
Yes, our website is www.thecidercidersfarm.com. So it's The Cider Farm. And where to buy would be the best page to go to. So our, as I mentioned, the ciders can be shipped to 33 states outside of Wisconsin. Then we also list where you can buy within Wisconsin and the Chicago area. One thing about distilled spirits is that those are challenging to ship because the law requires that the person right. buy them physically there. And then the distiller has to have a contract with UPS or FedEx to actually move them. So we do have a distiller's permit now. And so we will be working on possibly doing that sometime in 2021 to see if we can get into a shipping program, because we get a lot of requests for people who want to ship our apple brandy. And especially now that it's during the holiday times, that's a popular request as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really thank you for sharing your story, your journey, certainly introducing our listeners to your product and where they can find it. We really appreciate you being on Eat Your Heartland Out today.
Stick around for more about cider on Eat Your Heartland Out after this quick break.
Hi, I'm Lisa Held, a food and agriculture journalist and the host of The Farm Report on Heritage Radio Network. I know it's difficult to find reliable information on where your food comes from and how that relates to the issues you care about, like the climate crisis, racial justice, and health. With Peeled, my new Substack newsletter, I'm going to make it easier for you. At Peeled, we'll pull back every story's shiny outer layer and go straight to the core. Each week, I'll send you an email with original reporting and expert analysis. I'll make it interesting, I promise. And together, we'll get better at making delicious, healthy choices that align with our values. Subscribe at peeled.substack.com.
Our final guest this hour is Walker Fanning, cider maker at the Hidden Cave Cidery in Wisconsin. Walker, thanks so much for joining the show today. We really are happy to have you here. And I'm so glad that you've been willing to take the time because I understand that you actually started out pretty young in the industry of cider, and I'm also pretty sure you're not even 30 yet. So how'd you get into the cider industry so young?
I started in the industry when I was 22 years old. I was an agronomy major at UW-Madison. I have lived in Wisconsin since the third grade, went to Middleton High School, UW-Madison, got my degree in agronomy. And then after college, I really wanted a job in the agricultural industry, but I wanted to do more of fruit crops. And I was interested in winemaking, and I'd never made hard cider or wine or beer before, but I thought it was an interesting idea to be able to grow something that you then turn into like a value-added product. And I was looking all summer for a job, wasn't finding anything, thought I was going to have to move back in with my parents. And then right at that last week of the summer, after my senior year of college, I got a job offer from a little apple orchard in the South Madison area where they were growing apples and making hard cider with it. And went out there just asking if I could volunteer on the farm because I was just looking for something to do. And when I got there, he offered me the orchard manager position. When I started doing that, you know, it was already mid to late September. So there wasn't a whole lot of orchard management to do. I was really just picking apples, but I noticed that they had a lot of hard cider that they, you know, that was the whole point of the antique orchard, growing all these special varieties of apples was for their hard cider. But they had a basement full of hard cider, and I was like, you know, there's not a lot of orchard management to do right now. Could I help sell your hard cider? And they said, sure. And I went around the Madison area and I helped them go from two liquor store locations to over 30 different bars and restaurants in the Madison area. And I was then they were having a little bit of issues with production. So I stepped in there and started helping them make the hard cider. Like I said, I had never done it before. I just sat down, pen to paper on a Monday night and wrote down everything I could about hard cider production. And then that next day I came in with a plan and we started doing it that way and we got really good results. And after a while, I was managing the orchard. I was selling the hard cider. I was making it. They asked me to start doing their taxes. And that's when I thought maybe I should start my own cider business.
Yeah, well, that really takes the term one man band to a whole new level. I mean, you're doing literally every job, and I mean, kudos to you for stepping up and having that, you know, determination and ingenuity and being able to, see, I think, opportunities that maybe the folks that were already established didn't maybe have that fresh eye. But it did give you this opportunity to almost learn every aspect of the business from farm to bottle, so to speak. Forget the taxes part. I mean, there's TurboTax for that in H&R Block, right? But you were doing all of this for somebody else's business. And is that what made you strike out on your own?
So, I mean, after a while, I was, once I was just kind of juggling all those responsibilities, it just kind of became like, you know, if I could do it, I have all the tools to do this on my own and start my own thing. And I have an agricultural background, so I understand the science there. And it's kind of funny. You'd think like taxes, oh, whatever, you could do it on TurboTax, but the way that the government decides what your product is, whether it's a hard cider, special natural wine, you know, a hard cider over 8% is technically a wine. If you fruit it, it's technically a wine. And that all affects the tax dollars that you pay per gallon. But they have a little piece in there that says you can't flavor your hard cider with any fruit flavors or else it becomes a special natural wine and your taxes go up. And so, but they did say you can add herbs to the cider as long as you're not trying to impart a fruit flavor and you're still in the hard cider tax class, which gets taxed at a much lower rate. So all of the ciders that I make, hibiscus juniper, rosehip rosemary, lemongrass lavender, chocolate hazelnut, none of these are actual fruit ciders. So it kind of, I was trying to work within the system to be innovative. And because I'm doing that, it led to a lot of types of ciders that nobody else was making because, you know, I was just looking at the tax laws.
I got to tell you, this is like my favorite thing that I've heard thus far, just because I have a government background. I spent, 12 years in politics, 10 years in state government, and I served on the Ways and Means Committee, and the Agriculture Committee, my government is actually my background. And so what's been really fun, at least for me, the policy wonk, is in talking to all these wonderful entrepreneurs and growers and makers, is also the kind of behind the music, behind the curtain of all these policy issues that are pervasive when you're dealing particularly with an alcoholic product of any form. So any kind of value-added product, whether, we've talked to folks that make wine-based jelly and yourself. I mean, the fact that, from basically necessity came, ingenuity and opportunity for something that, maybe you wouldn't have gone the route of herb-infused cider, really just shows how multifaceted, being an entrepreneur, particularly in the culinary and kind of alcohol and agriculture space, it really is. I'm so glad that you brought up, the unique products that you make. And I want you to tell our listeners a little bit about your process of, we obviously now know a little bit about the fact that you kind of fell onto herbs, at least partially because of the tax implications. But, how did you decide that herbs would be something that could be a good match with the flavor profile of cider? And walk us through that kind of, trial and error and experimental process that you go through to identify those flavors.
Well, when I was living downtown, I saw in the little local mail that there was a foraging-herbal class learning about herbal medicines and things that you can forage for in Wisconsin with Moonwise Herbs, which is owned by and operated by Linda Conroy, and she was teaching the class over at Obrecht Gardens. And so I was interested a little bit in doing this herb-infused cider, and then I took her class, and it was just kind of mind-blowing to see all the different things that you can do with obscure ingredients. And that was actually where I had rose hips for the first time, and rosehip rosemary was my first hard cider creation. And she made a rosehip wow. tea. She made highbush cranberry juice, which is a type of cranberry, and this juice just tasted like the most perfect like cranberry cocktail, but there was no sugar added to it, which was amazing. And then we had pickled burdock and some tinctures that were really old.
Wow.
We took grapes and smashed them up and put them in honey, and the honey preserves the grapes, and then you can spread it on toast or whatever later. So it was just kind of like all of these kind of crazy fun things that you can do with ingredients you wouldn't really think of ever using, or in some cases like burdock root, it's really kind of like a pest that, oh, maybe I could use this plant instead of just throwing it in the compost pile. And so that really got me looking towards wanting to experiment more. And now when I kind of chase down a flavor, for instance, lemongrass lavender, I was getting food at Madison Sourdough downtown, and my friend ordered a lavender lemonade, and they let me have some, and I was like, wow, this is a really good flavor combination. So I went back to the cidery, and I reached into my bag of herbs, and I had bought a lot because I was experimenting, and I picked out lemongrass, and I found lavender in the bag, and I'm like, I think I can make a really good, like, lemongrass lavender hard cider with some honey in it, just like they have at Madison Sourdough, but a cider version. And I went and did that, and it was really delicious. It's our highest rated cider online. And really, when I get some new inspiration, like for instance, a cider I was going to release last spring that was Elderflower Holy Basil. And I really had no idea what these would taste like. And so I called up Linda Conroy and from Moonwise Herbs, and she picked up the phone and kind of talked to me about using all these different herbs. And the same is true when I did hibiscus juniper. She said, you know, really get those juniper flavors, you gotta crush them or put them in a blender just so you really can release that flavor. And with all the herbs, you know, I'm slapping them before I steep them in the cider. And then other things, like with the rose hips, you don't just put rose hips in cider and let it sit. You take them and boil them in cider and create kind of like this juice paste that I like press, almost just like pressing apples. And then I take that tart rose hip juice and put that in the cider and then infuse it with like a handful of rosemary per 260 gallons. So just all the little things that you might not even realize because something is so foreign to you as an ingredient. And just in the way that she's gracious enough to pass along the information to me about this stuff, when in turn, when somebody comes to me, I had Kyle Metz from Funk Factory call me last month, and he said he wanted to make a sour beer with rose hips, and he had some questions for me, and so I kind of walked him through my process because it's just more fun to share and to have and to collaborate within your community and really help each other build on what other people have already figured out and sharing, and then just expanding all the, you know, the beverage market in general.
There's no question that that kind of mentor and mentee relationship is, you know, wildly beneficial to everybody involved. And I'm hearing this time and time again as I'm talking to so many folks like yourself, as I, just as an interviewer and the host of this program, I'm learning more and more about, you know, these different aspects of these value-added products. And what I'm hearing is almost this Midwestern value coming through as the show is about the, you know, the intersection of food and culture in the American Midwest, of that sense of community, that sense of collaboration, and that really has been an emerging theme. And so it's wonderful that you have that kind of community collaboration and mentorship. And it also sounds like you are committed to utilizing, you know, local resources and local ingredients. Where do you get your herbs from? Are they all from, you know, regionally around Madison, Wisconsin in general? Do you ship any in?
Yeah, so the herbs, I buy the herbs dried because I find that that is the best way in terms of just keeping stuff from spoiling and having things available to you when you need it or things to experiment with. Just to have dry herbs, then it's just less, you know, spoiling on you and all that. You just got your bag of herbs and you're set there. With the cider, like the cider base, all of my apples come from Wisconsin, and that was really important to me because I went to school for agriculture at UW-Madison, and I actually continued to be a farmer over in Fitchburg at Apple Garden. I'm the orchard manager there, and I run my cider business downtown, and then all the honey that I use comes from Gentle Breeze in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin, and by sourcing products locally instead of going to bigger markets where, say, I could get it for cheaper. Like, I could have juice shipped out from New York, and with the shipping, I'd still be paying basically as much as I'd be paying for juice here in Wisconsin. So that just goes to show you, and that's getting it as juice, not even as concentrate. If you're getting it at concentrate, you know, you can get that for so cheap. But that's not what it's about. Mm-hmm. That's not what it's about. Being a local producer is about supporting your farmers and helping them build out their industry. And I want a young or an older apple farmer to say, I want to continue doing this. And I know that Walker Fanning is going to come and he's going to buy my apples this year, or he's going to buy my honey again this year, and just to help them grow. And then as an industry, as a state, everything slowly becomes improved. And, you know, we're sitting between two huge apple producing states, Minnesota and Michigan, and we're a little bit behind Michigan. Them on our apple industry in terms of just building it out and making use of all of our resources. So our farmers do a great job here, and I want to see more of them, and I want to see more people getting into the apple industry, because it's a lot of fun making hard cider or growing apples or running a U-Pick apple farm. It's all great, and I want to see more of it.
Well, we need more Walker Fannings, that's for sure, because with your level of you know, growing expertise and enthusiasm and commitment, you're definitely going to be part of the next generation, you know, already growing that apple industry and all of those value added products. You know, what's next for you? I mean, you've told us about the ingredients, the process, the different things that you're producing. But you work with a local distillery to help the process, and you don't have that yet on your own. Is that something that you are looking to do, open up your own operation, flying solo in the future?
Yeah, I signed a lease on my own cider business, my own brick and mortar, I should say. And I'm planning to open this spring, March, April, May, somewhere in there. And yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We got a cool vibe that we're going to do in there.
That's exciting. So you have this new brick and mortar that's going to be opening up spring 2021. What can somebody expect if they're going to visit it? And what's the name of this place going to be called?
Well, so it's Hidden Cave Cidery. It's on Pleasant View Road and right before
in Madison.
It's a Middleton. It's in Middleton Industrial Park, right by Capitol Ice Skating Arena. And what people can expect is a lot of fun. There'll be like a little bit of food stuff, like, meat and cheese board, all that, fort fromage, some fun stuff. We're going to do lots of different styles of cider and a lot of different flavors of cider. And, you know, now having my own tank space and my own production facility means a lot more small batch releases to keep everything just really exciting. So right now I do lemongrass lavender, rosehip rosemary, hibiscus juniper. I made chocolate hazelnut last year. I have elderflower holy basil. I just released a rum barrel hibiscus juniper. I have a smoked whiskey maple syrup barrel lemongrass lavender that's going to come out in the next couple of months.
Talk about a complex palette that is.
Yeah, and I'm gonna make a peanut butter and honey hard cider. I'm working on a honeysuckle French toast hard cider.
Ooh.
So just a lot of fun stuff, a lot of out of the box stuff, and
seasonal. Are you gonna be doing these seasonal releases?
Seasonal releases, and I like to keep some year-round stuff, but really kind of what I'm working on and what I started last year was bringing in those like dark beer flavors into the hard cider industry. So like right now we're seeing a lot of fruit forward, when you talk about lemongrass lavender or hibiscus juniper, that lemongrass or that hibiscus really gives it a fruitiness.
Right, a bit of a citrusy.
Right, where then you can kind of get into when you talk about chocolate hazelnut, that's just a completely different flavor profile, hits your palate much differently. And the thing that's really nice for people, I think, when they drink these is they see these aren't sugar bombs. These are really nicely flavored on the drier side, even the ones that people are going to think are sweet, like my salted caramel that I did a couple years ago. And so kind of bring in that, you know, peanut butter and honey, that's another kind of dark beer style. And so those are going to be kind of more of my winter releases. Then when we mm-hmm. come into summer, I want to do more of single varietal blend, like a Jonathan apple single varietal, which mm-hmm. would be packed with flavor, a Kieved cider. It's a fermented in a special way, really slow, just all sorts of really fun stuff and unique stuff and stuff that will only be available at Hidden Cave Cidery because I'm the only person that's going to make it.
Well, you are the man. I really am going to have to make a special trip out to Wisconsin. Twist my arm. I love Wisconsin, and I think my listeners know this because I'm always talking about it. And I'm from Ohio. I love my home state, but Wisconsin is a very close second for so many reasons. Just wonderful food, wonderful people. And if we can't make the trip out, at least, you know, or we have to wait until it's open, is there a way to get this unique cider shipped out across the country, or are we going to have to, you know, do a road trip?
Yeah, for now, it's definitely a road trip situation. But in the future, what's nice about Wisconsin is they allow you to get your direct wine shipper permit. So once I have my own place, your cidery is technically a winery, so I'll be able to start shipping all across Wisconsin and hopefully into other states as well. So that's probably would be coming next summer for that. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Walker, tell our listeners before I let you go, what's your website so people can learn more about you and your very, very, I think, innovative cider operation?
Yeah, my website is hiddencavecider.com. You can check out all the different food recipes that I've made with hard cider. We even have a fried cheese curd recipe, very Wisconsin
type
of recipe. And we also have hard cider cocktail recipes, a whole bunch of those. We release videos. My story's on there. And if you're ever drinking a bottle of Hidden Cave, on the bottom of the bottle is a date code that corresponds to a date on our website. And that shows you what apples are in that bottle that you have that you're drinking.
How special. That really does make it a very interactive experience for the consumer and you know, really brings you right there, understanding people. I think want to know where their food comes from these days. And when it's this kind of high quality and complex product, that's just really great that you're able to provide that information to folks that are drinking your cider. So thank you again, Walker, for joining the program. And let me tell you, as soon as I'm able to, you know, fill up my car I'm heading out to Wisconsin because, you know, cheese curds and cider are two of my favorite things. So, and I got to try some of these unique, the one that involves French toast, I think save some of that for me.
I will do.
Thanks again for being on the program.
Eat Your Heartland Out is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.